K-Mud Podcast presents.
Heart of the Earth. This is a program about Native Americans and other indigenous cultures. My name is Agnes. So I thought I'd dedicate today's show to Native American women who are just incredible poets. And first we're going to hear from Tanya Winder. She's a poet, a vocalist, a writer, an educator, and a motivational speaker from the Southern Ute, Duckwater, Shoshone, and Pyramid Lake Paiute Nations. And she received her BA in English from Stanford and an MFA in creative writing from the University of New Mexico. And it was written a few years back, but very important today. So I thought I would share two of her poems. This first one is called Resistance. Noun, resistance. To exert oneself or to counteract or defeat. Two, to withstand the force or effect of. Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the ramparts we watched over so gallantly streaming. And the concussion, grenades, red glare, water canyons bursting in freezing air, temperatures and rubber bullets shot at water protectors gave proof through the night that America is still spelled with three K's. America, a word that starts with an A, turned upright like pointed white hood. Saluting the settler colonialism, a dangerous definition or doctrine of discovery buried in the highest court of the land, supreme, supremacy of the free, home of the brave braves who became animals upon discovery. But you can't discover a people who already existed, and you cannot find something that was never lost. Even an indigenous Holocaust couldn't get us written about in history books. Our numbers may not be written in arms, but you can count the amount of headstones from children buried in Indian boarding schools. America thought we died there when they cut our hair, stabbed our tongues into silence, pried our mouths open into singing anthems of freedom in English, a language America force-fed down our throats like a pill called assimilation, telling us to let go of all we hold sacred, like our connection to the land, by moving us onto reservation, into desolation, a symbolic annihilation. So deafening today, people forget we exist, or that we are real, never seeing beyond the painted faces of Washington. Redskins. This corporate-colored red skins our identity and bleeds in a country built on the backs of brown bodies, genocide, and slavery. What do those stars and stripes represent when those in power won't honor our treaty rights? Who's right when we all have a right to survive and be free, to live, to drink clean water, and not build walls around these man-made borders? When history is written by colonizers, they are always heroes. Colonizer made from colon, body prolific, a black snake swallowing everything, a black snake swallowing everything, a black snake swallowing everything. When they're drilling in the name of money and killing our water and soil in the name of oil, and our sisters are being stolen, and the holes we dig in the earth mirror the holes we keep digging in ourselves. We keep digging in ourselves. Who can tell what the real truth is when alternative facts are birthed in a colonial womb? But the revolution will never be won through patriarchy or held in the fist or lips of patriarchal men, but it will be born from women who know how to carry movements in the womb of intertwining lives. The revolution will be birthed from women who know that deliverance and delivery come from being ripped open in an unstoppable force that reminds us our most powerful weapons will always be giving life and a body in prayer that stands up unafraid to speak. Can you see me? Can you see me when you sing? Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave? You have the right to remain silent, but you also have the right not to be. Here's another one of hers. Yes. Everything happens. It's called For Girls and Women on Fire. Everything happens for a reason and breaks you thought where heartaches was really creator helping you dodge a massive bullet destined for danger, rupture, and the darkness you crawled your way out of long ago. So let go. Let go of anything that didn't work out the way you wanted. Because you know this, deep in your heart of hearts, you know. You were born from a line of fierce women on fire who shine light in the darkest of places and heal those in need. And if people are afraid of you, let them be afraid. They should be, because you are powerful beyond containment, the kind of free people dream of embodying, and everything is coming together the way it always destined. Because you are destined for greatness, and anything you ever set your mind to, you looked yourself in the mirror and said, we are going to do this. And you did. You did do it. So don't stop now, because you are meant to keep all of the promises you ever made to yourself. And more poetry. Yes, today I'm doing Native American women poets in honor of Women's History Month. And this next one is from Diane Burns. She's a Anishinaabe Ojibwe and a Chemehuevi Indian and attended the Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where she was awarded the Congressional Medal of Merit for Academic and Artistic Excellence. She later attended Barnard College of Columbia University in New York City. She has written so many books, and she passed on just a few years ago, but I've always loved her poetry. And I love this one. Sure, you can ask me a personal question. How do you do? No, I'm not Chinese. No, not Spanish. No, I am American Indian, Native American. No, not from India. No, not Apache. No, not Navajo. No, not Sioux. No, we are not extinct. Yes, Indian. Oh, so that's where you got those high cheekbones? Your great-grandmother, huh? An Indian princess, huh? Hair down to there? Let me guess. Cherokee. Oh, so you've had an Indian friend? That close? Oh, so you've had an Indian lover? That tight? Oh, so you've had an Indian servant? That much? Yeah, it was awful what you guys did to us. It's really decent of you to apologize. No, I don't know where you can get peyote. No, I don't know where you can get Navajo rugs real cheap. No, I didn't make this. I bought it at Bloomingdale's. Thank you. I like your hair, too. I don't know if anyone knows whether or not Cher is really Indian. No, I didn't make it rain tonight. Yeah, uh-huh, spirituality. Uh-huh, yeah, spirituality. Uh-huh, Mother Earth. Yeah, uh-huh, uh-huh, spirituality. No, I did not major in archery. Yeah, a lot of us drink too much. Some of us can't drink enough. This ain't no stoic look. This is my face. And the late Wendy Rose, and I had met her in the Bay Area way back, probably 40, sometime in the 80s. But she says, I am part of Indian country that is young and in the process still of becoming self-defined. I was born in Oakland, California in 1948, daughter of a Hopi man and a Miwok mixed-blood woman from the region of Yosemite Park in the Sierras. My appearance is ambiguous enough for the local children to scream chink at me, yet have any, but yet ha, at me yet have my students at the University of California tell me, but you don't look Indian. So from my early childhood, I have viewed myself as an urban breed and fantasized that I was so clearly one thing or another that no one would ever get it wrong. In some kind of unconscious recognition of my, quote, hybrid status, I have always had an identification with the Centaur, although neither my Indian nor white blood is to be confused with the bestiality of the horse. Like the Centaur, I have always felt misunderstood and isolated, whether with Indians or with non-Indians. This is important because it has a great deal to do with my poetry. The poetry, too, is hybrid, like me. There are elements of Indianness, of Englishness, of mythology, and of horseness. I'm learning to be patient, not easy when you grow up with the noise of cars and tracks and trucks whizzing past. I am learning to be as tolerant of Indians who misunderstand me as I have tried to be with non-Indians who have misunderstood me. I am learning to be proud of my urban mixed heritage, just as the occupants of Indian country have had to learn to regain pride in native heritage. I've come to believe that I represent Indian country as legitimately as any full blood, as any person fluent in their native language, not to be confused with representing Hopi or Miwok or, for that matter, England. My poetry is the tool I have used to come to terms with this, not only my poetry, really, but the poetry of other occupants of Indian country. And I thought I'd share some of her poems. This one's called Sarah, Cherokee Doctor. Her touch heals in the great sip of prairie wind over ancient plains, gusting. A power mountain born, a song, or okure grass held like needles on the tongue and blown into radiance. One year, she was that woman kneeling on the edge of camp. You could see her there. Sun dancers spun before her. Vision-tracking warriors pledged to spin till the songs were done and the flesh was torn. Her healing hands, fragrant with the scratch of sweetgrass, the whisper of dew, sends them away as they come. Her many sons, weeping to her breast. They slept, she said, shivering against her in their sweat. And she touched their dripping hair and steady restored them to lock deep the memory in their flutes. Give their eyes up to incessant sun, bone to the earth and balance to each day done, turn by turn, sweat by sweat, prayer by prayer, dropping about the pole like human heart's blood or the tears of an eagle. Now she is healing again at the lectern, in the boardroom, warriors resting yet at her breast. Her voice is singing through university halls, that high, clear sound, that incantation we have come to know. She struggles to keep us well-mannered and fat, bearing us like her unborn children, and we keep her magic memorized. The journey must be away from her as tiny fish dart from the strength of their mother. We will be healed in the shadow of her dancing shawl, covering fringe inch by inch, feet first, then hip to shoulder, whose brown arms twist about us and keep the ambulance intact. And again, that was from Wendy Rose. She has so many beautiful poems. I thought this one, how about how I became a graduate student? It was when my songs became quiet, no one was threatened, no eyes kept locked on my red hands to see if they would steal the beads and silver from museum shelves. When I became, in the owl's way, a hunter, they trusted the microscope that hid me in the grass, that bent up and over me, too big to drive away. That's how they knew they could move in. Those quiet songs, I could tell you, simply expose the stone spirit of warrior Kachina stepping sideways through the village, or I could say that the brave and ragged meat of me is being tongued away by a foreign god. I am shut away in a house where all are dead, and when it looks like I may break loose, they tell me, I'm moving now, and congratulations. All the time, my stone spirit song grows and erupts and laps over the world. My legs roll away like water on stone, going downhill to an ancient matrix, uprooting in the spring and moving on. It's that kind of moving from grave to grave. Wendy Rose. I thought I'd share. This is from Joy Harjo. I mean, I just have probably, you know, five or six, I think I counted seven of her books. But I thought I'd share this with you. It's called The Appearance of the Sacred Was Not Likely. And Joy Harjo is she's an enrolled member of the Muskogee tribe. And she's from Oklahoma. I just saw her last month performing in Oklahoma. And she was our Poet Laureate of the United States. In the months before the birth of my third granddaughter, a Navajo deity appeared to a blind woman who lived far away from the cities in the distant part of the reservation. This was an unusual occurrence, something unheard of in recent history. Such visits come about historically only in times of terrible stress, when people have lost the way. The deity explained that the people were in danger and that unless they kept up the traditions that made them, particularly Navajo, a complex and beautiful system of prayer and thanksgiving, they would suffer the loss of what makes them powerful in this world. After this visit, many people made pilgrimages to the old woman's hogan to see the place the deity stood, to hear the story once again and talk about it with each other. We who heard the story in Albuquerque talked about it, pondered it as we watched the kids' basketball games, ate dinner together, or dressed for work. We considered the meaning and timing of the appearance of this shimmering one and wondered how it will continue to mean in this world apparently driven into craziness by violence and greed. Though I am not Navajo, I am related to many Navajos, and two of my granddaughters and grandson are Navajo. I have been as influenced by Navajo thought as I have by European thought, though I am Muskogee. As a longtime resident of lands near one of the sacred mountains of the Navajo, I too am affected by the shape and meaning of the deity and the message. The deity's visitation occurred as my granddaughter, Desiree, was forming in her mother's belly. The event changed the atmosphere with nutrients, helped feed the growing child. When a woman is pregnant, she must be careful about what she thinks, what she says, and the kinds of places and people she is around. She is especially vulnerable, as is the child, to negativity of any kind. It was not by accident that this granddaughter is born to us at this particular time. I see her as a link to the prophecy, one who came to us because our love for this land, for the people. When she came into the world, she was accompanied by the spirits of her father's great-grandmother and my great-aunt. This pregnancy was much more peaceful than my daughter's first. Desiree was born quickly and easily, so quick and easy that by the time my friend and I made it to the Bernalillo County Medical Center just after midnight on July 2nd of 1996, she had just been born. The sky was thick with butterflies in the few days before she was born. They flew circles around us, alerted us that the birth was near, that this girl they accompanied was about to be born. After she was born in that indigo calm just after midnight, I gave her the name, which means butterfly girl in Muskogee. She was born with the gift of being able to see sharply into the belly of the earth, and with the ability comes the responsibility to speak of what she sees, no matter the difficult truth of it. Her voice is startling in its renaissance and depth. She loves the complexity of language and will carry a word in her mouth, tasting it for hours. The sound of a voice will often reveal a map of destiny. We read these maps unconsciously for intention, to answer unspoken questions, or simply to admire the quality of song in the nuance of inflection. Our voices change according to our response to the intimate emotional landscape, to the shape of our evolving nations. Her appearance here with us marks a convergence of all of us, yet she is ultimately, definitely herself, a soul who will say no and mean it despite the will of others, a lover of horses, cats, and other creatures, one who has already walked through fire. Joy Harjo. And this is from Linda Lagarde Grover. She's Anishinaabe, and she's an enrolled member of the Beaufort Band of Ojibwe. And she said, this is called Everything You Need to Know in Life You'll Learn in Boarding School. Speak English. Forget the language of your grandparents. It is dead. Forget their teachings. They are ungodly and ignorant. Cleanliness is next to godliness. Indians are not clean. Your parents did not teach you proper hygiene. Stay in line. This is a toothbrush. Hang it on the hook next to the others. Do not allow the bristles to touch. This spreads the disease that you bring to school from your families. Make your bed with mitered corners. A bed not properly made will be torn apart. Start over. Remember and be grateful that boarding school feeds and clothes you. Say grace before meals in English. Don't cry. Crying never solved anything. Write home once every month in English. Tell your parents that you are doing very well. You'll never amount to anything. Make the most of your opportunities. You'll never amount to anything. Answer when the teacher addresses you in English. If your family insists and you can provide transportation for you to visit home in the summer, report to the matron's office immediately upon your return. You will be allowed into the dormitory after you've been sanitized and deloused. Busy hands are happy hands. Keep yourself occupied. You'll never amount to anything. Books are our friends. Reading is your key to the world. Forget the language of your grandparents. It is dead. If you are heard speaking it, you will kneel on a navy bean for 1 hour. We will ask if you have learned your lesson. You will answer in English. Spare the rod and spoil the child. We will not spare the rod. We will cut your hair. We will shame you. We will lock you in the basement. Learn from that. Improve yourself. You'll never amount to anything. Speak English.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support People Powered Radio at kmud.org.
One of my favorite women poets is Christos. And I interviewed her one time on the radio when she was going to do a reading out in Fort Bragg, which I actually went down to. But she's Native American. She was born in 1946 and was raised in San Francisco, a political activist and speaker, as well as an artist and writer. She is self-educated. Her tireless momentum is directed at better understanding how issues of colonialism, genocide, class, and gender affect the lives of women and Native people. And, I'd start off with this one. I am not your princess. Sandpaper between two cultures which tear one another apart. I am not a means by which you can reach spiritual understanding or even learn to do beadwork. I'm only willing to tell you how to make fry bread. 1 cup flour, spoon of salt, spoon of baking powder, stir, add milk or water or beer until it holds together. Slap each piece into rounds. Let rest. Fry in hot grease until golden. This is Indian food. Only if you know that Indian is a government word which has nothing to do with our names for ourselves. I won't chant for you. I admit no spirituality to you. I will not sweat with you or ease your guilt with fine turtle tails. I will not wear dancing clothes to read poetry or explain hardly anything at all. I don't think your attempts to understand us are going to work, so I'd rather you left us in whatever peace we can still scramble up. After all, you continue to do. If you send me one more damn flyer about how to heal myself for $300 with special feminist counseling, I'll probably set fire to something. If you tell me one more time that I'm wise, I'll throw up on you. Look at me. See my confusion, loneliness, fear, worrying about all our struggles to keep, what little is left for us. Look at my heart, not your fantasies. Please don't ever again tell me about your Cherokee great-great-grandmother. Don't assume I know every other Native activist in the world personally, that I even know names of all the tribes or can pronounce names I've never heard, or that I'm an expert at the peyote stitch. If you ever again tell me how strong I am, I'll lay down on the ground and moan so you'll see at last my human weakness, like your own. I'm not strong. I'm scraped. I'm blessed with life while so many I've known are dead. I have work to do, dishes to wash, a house to clean. There is no magic. See my simple, cracked hands, which have washed the same things you wash. See my eyes, dark with fear, in a house by myself late at night. See that to pity me or to adore me are the same. One cup flour, spoon of salt, spoon of baking powder, liquid to hold. Remember, this is only my recipe. There are many others. Let me rest here. At last. And when I interviewed her, I got to do this one's kind of funny. It's called Poem for Lettuce. And I know you don't want to be eaten any more than a cow or a pig or a chicken does, but they're the vicious vegetarians, and they say you do, gobbling up the innocent green beans who gladden any reasonable person's heart. I'll tell you, little lettuce, you'll see them in cowskin boots and belts, and nobody can make sense of that. Those virtuous vegetarians, they'll look at you with prim distaste while you enjoy your bacon. Make me want to buy some cowboy movie blood capsules. Imagine an introduction. I'd like you to meet Lily. She's a non-smoking, non-drinking, vegetarian, separatist Pisces with chocophobia. And I smile while secretly biting down on the capsules concealed in my cheeks, then shake her hand, drooling blood. I whisper, "Hi. I'm a flaming carnivorous double Scorpio who'll eat anything." And as she wilts in dismay, trembles with trepidation, hisses with disgust, then little lettuces will have our moment of laughing revenge. And Christos wrote a poem for me, and she read it here on air on Heart of the Earth after I interviewed her. And I was just, you know, we had talked on the phone a lot, and we did this interview, and then she wrote this poem in it. In the conqueror's language, I name the red white war, a prayer written on ghosts of dead silenced trees. We sing for Turtle Island, our roots go deep down for 50,000 years. Not your mascots, nor your shame, as you continue to lie to us, to steal from us, to rape us, to use us, to incarcerate us, to torture us, to experiment on us, to murder us. We pray, touched by spirit, cleaner than blue sky, clearer than blue sky. This war is not a story of your victories, but our lessons in recognizing evil. All our ancestors' bones stacked in museum boxes we gather to honor. All our names used for machines, city dumps, film institutions, ball games, cartoons, garage garbage bags. We call home to our returning tongues. All our belongings ruthlessly scattered in England and Europe. Here weigh the balance of your souls. All you have slaughtered, sleep with us in the sacred black night. All you have taken remains ours. All which seems to have been erased still breathes. And again, that was Christos. And she is as I've said, one of my favorite poets, and she is just such an incredible woman. I want to remind everyone again that we are during our fun drive. Yes, educate. We educate. And I get letters and phone calls, and people say that they do learn, and that's all I ask, is that you listen. And I know, you know, for many years, Heart of the Earth was really hard for people to hear. You know, 40 years ago when I talked about the boarding schools, no one said, I never read that in the thing. I never heard that. I said, you think they're going to tell you that? And then after what happened in British Columbia when they found, a few years back, when they found the children that were buried around the boarding schools, someone came up to me and said, now I get you, Agnes. And I said, thank you. Might have taken many years. But sometimes people don't want to believe the things I say. They won't believe it till they see it in the media. Except we're not getting truth anymore. But you do have K-Mud. And I will be back next week.
This has been a K-Mud podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast, and also on our website, kmud.org.